Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for PremierGuitar.com. I'm hanging out at the Allstate Arena in Chicago with my friend Ian. Ian, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Ian is the nanny, I guess you could say, of Josh Klinghoffer and all of his pedals here, as you see. So we'll start with the pedals.
I would say ill-tempered caretaker rather than nanny, but but yeah, it's not a bad start. Yeah, as you can see, Josh loves pedals. It's different every day. What we have here today is, it's probably been like this for about the last two, three shows. Yeah, he likes to chop and change. Some things he likes to hang on to, some things he likes to just try once and throw away.
What do you think are what he has the most connection with, or he always, you know, turnover rate? Is it the delays, or is it fuzz boxes? What just seems to be right now that pedal that he's always after?
It really doesn't abide by one rule. It could just be whatever takes his fancy, really. I mean, he's got things he does love to stick with, like the old choruses. There's certain things that he needs to stick with for the Chili Pepper sounds, I guess. You know, he has to sort of, he can't depart too far from the sounds used through a lot of their back catalog. So we don't have the old CE1, but we've got a couple of CE2s here. We've got the modded one, which is really, really wide and out of tune. And then they've just got a classic.
What's the mod on it for?
It's just to widen the sweep and the rate. So yes, you get a really almost Leslie-like out of tune kind of wobble to that. We cycle through a lot of different drives and fuzz boxes. We've got things that just add a little presence. We've got things that add a crazy low end gain, fizzy gain, fuzz, all kinds of stuff. And then he likes to mess around with placing things at different points of the chain as well. Like this EP booster is like way up the chain now from where it started off. But it seems to work very well for us there. And then we've got all these sort of modulation and filter sweeps here. We've got the Line 6 doing the job of all the weird kind of synth experimentation that came from a lot of Chili Pepper songs. Just all different kinds of ethereal reverbs and things put on long phases. We have here, I would definitely like to give a shout out to Jean Baudin for the Expressionator. This is a great device.
Explain to everyone what that does.
Well, it basically just allows you to use one expression pedal on up to three expression pedal expressed devices. So it's basically like a three-channel split. But then you can apply whichever kind of taper you wish to that channel. So say you want to apply a reverse taper to one particular pedal, you can do that. So you know, the same movement will have a completely opposite effect on the pedal next to it. So that's cool, because the Cybersonic here, for example, we originally had to use a reverse wired expression pedal of its own, but now I could just have one pedal and the taper is reversed on the expressioner instead. And also you can set the span appropriate to the frequency range you're after for each pedal, mm-hmm. and it will remember that. So no, it's a really great device. So yeah, Jean Baudin, he's my man for that one.
My question when I see setups with like multiple delays or phasers or choruses is how does Josh use it with, you know, does he cascade it or does he use a specific CE2 for, you know, that song, whereas the other CE2 is a different song?
It goes both ways. You've got, you know, certain stock sounds that people would expect from the recording. As I say, the right hand of those CE2s just has a very warm, yeah, I guess you might almost say a slightly 80s sounding chorus on it, you know, but then people are going to hear that and say, oh, actually, that's a sound I know. Other things he will start combining on the spur of the moment, on the fly. So, yeah, he leaps between recreating recorded sounds and then just as and when he feels like it, just throwing all kinds of things in. He's very freeform in that way. You know, he never plays the same thing twice, never plays the same solo twice, never plays it with the same effects twice. So... it's interesting. I hear him on ears, of course, from off stage. Yeah. You know, when I'm off stage there, and I do sometimes find myself scratching my head because I can't quite tell if you're supposed to sound like that or you know, is it broken? So I kind of have to try and make eye contact and say, "You okay?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, having a great time." You know, so good. Okay, carry on.
With the delays and the fuzz, you know, in certain songs like Danny California has towards the end, a live recording I heard for their free EP they had for download from England show. Yeah. There's a really great fuzz tone in that, and also Give It Away has some great long, you know, delays and reverbs going on. When it comes to those songs, does he always kind of, you know, let's say Danny California, you said it's different, but does he always use like fuzzes and distortion in those parts, or does he even switch up that where it's clean?
So sometimes, he will just drop in what three gigs in a row might have been a great searing fuzzy lead. He might just drop that completely and go for something different. You know, I wouldn't say necessarily. In terms of attack or approach differently, it's not like he's suddenly going to start playing a clean jazz solo where he was previously playing a sort of fuzzed out Gary solo, but yeah, he's quite open to throwing open the textures pedal wise, you know, in any direction.
What have you noticed? You said that, you know, you're always fixing pedals when you have time. Yeah. What with Josh's nature of how he kicks on pedals, you know, how do you combat that with being a guy that has to set up this and take care of it?
Yeah, it's really just a case of you just got to pour over it every day. You know, to my mind, when I came to the gig, you know, I knew that he, you know, I looked after him several years ago, and he had a big pedal board, well, two big pedal boards then. You know, even then it was the biggest thing I'd ever seen, you know. But his approach is that, you know, he wants the pedals at his feet. You know, he's not interested in things being in a rack where he can't get it. If he wants to drop to his knees and just go for it with his hands, he will. A lot of times you'll just see him there on his knees and the guitar's just feeling back and he's going crazy with the controls. I mean, he gets sounds out of things that I have no idea how he does it. You know, I'll look up and I get, as I said, I think it's either broken, and I look up and he's fiddling with it and I'm like, oh, I think he knows what he's doing. But he gets sounds out of things. Yeah, he has a great understanding because he's not just a guitarist, he's a keyboard player and he's willing to modular synth. He's a fantastic drummer as well. So his approach to effects and like studio devices is way beyond my ken, you know. So I just give it to him and say, here you go, that's how you had it yesterday. And he goes, well, thanks very much. And he gets stuck in.
You got to mention the Bright Onion pedals, yeah. Just because of the way they're set up and how it kind of harnesses and controls.
Harnesses the danger, yeah. as I say, when I came to the gig, Josh had, you know, been piling effects onto a board, you know, through rehearsals, trying things out. And the problem was that the signal came in one end, went out the other, went through every pedal in turn. So obviously, if there was to be a failure of some kind, that would be pretty disastrous trying to troubleshoot a board, yeah, or several boards this big, you know, in front of a screaming crowd, you know. You do tend to break a bit of a sweat at that point. So I went to, as I say, the whole bypass strip thing was out of the question. So I went to this chap, James Murphy, who runs Bright Onion Pedals in Brighton, south of London. And with a few ideas of mine and a few of his, and we mulled over it for a while, and he custom built me these. So basically it's a true bypass switch. Every pedal's on a loop, as it would be. Okay. The pedals are all on. And as you can see here, you know, if I have a problem, if I have a completely lost a signal, I can just bypass one whole board at once. And if the signal comes back, I can say, well, okay, it's the fault's on this board. And then I could just go through each pedal in turn. The lights only come on when the pedal was off, because I didn't want to add extra lights to the whole thing. You know, yeah, I thought, let's just have pedals, you know, lights off when pedals are on. And then I know that that's the pedal that's off. So then if I find the problem, like this one was causing a problem last show, I could just flick him off and then he can carry on. I can take the pedal away, fix it and come back. And it doesn't stop him from playing. He can just keep going.
A lot of guesswork.
Well, yeah. I mean, I woke up very early, many months, months of mornings before I actually started the show, trying to mull all this out in my mind. For a long time, I was convinced that I would be able to bring in this whole kind of very forward-thinking, you know, switcher thing. And at the end, I just had to say, you know, it's not what he wants. It's not what he does. He would be really alienated by that, and he would have to relearn the way he'd rehearsed all these songs in months of rehearsal. And I thought, well, there's no point in me making my guitarist backtrack for the sake of making my own life easy. You know, I've got to do it the way he wants to do it. So, but I mean, as I said, I mean, there are plenty of things that are perfectly reliable. It's particularly along, you know, the smashing between clean and dirty sections that these guys get quite a lot of hassle. We all hit one and think, no, that's not what I want. I want that one instead. As I say, there's a lot of skateboard grip tape on these because he's sometimes standing on one leg, sort of waggling a foot at a pedal. Yeah, exactly. If he's off balance, he might not catch it, and then he misses it. So, yeah, it's just a case of sort of making things work in whatever way is necessary, really. You know, and sometimes the solution is obvious, and sometimes it isn't.
Do you want to go ahead and show us, I guess, the exact signal path that all these pedals are going through?
Yeah, sure. Well, we actually start, obviously, the wireless chain comes in, so we've got the paddles here. These run to the wireless unit, which sit behind the amps. And then we have a long loom, which runs under the stage, emerges here and runs right to the front of the pedal board here. So you'll actually see there's little handwritten dots on these pedals. That's to tell me which pedal corresponds to which switch. Oh, okay. On here. So if I'm in a mad panic, I just go, oh God, it's M. Okay, because I can't even be bothered thinking about the names of the pedals at that point. Similarly, these all have numbers which correspond to the outs on the Voodoo Lab power supply underneath. Again, so if you're fumbling around in the dark in a hurry, you need to know which one's become unplugged or which one might be dodgy. So anyway, so the signal comes into the tuner, then out to the WH10, which again is a whole bag of fun unto itself. And then we just run, say, from each pedal back to the looper, the big white switcher box, in the case of the one. So then we go a couple of drives, a couple of dirtier drives. This is the Keeley modded DS1. Just a fairly standard old governor here. We've got the Pigtronics. With a nice little bit of protection for the knobs, because that's going to get stamped on. Uh-huh. Then into the Wilson effects fuzz, that's great, that's noisy and loud, and we love that. Then into a series of old Boss Delays, just set for a couple of repeats, two very clipped repeats, and then the sort of glitching Radiohead like Johnny Greenwood kind of thing. And then we come up to the Memory Man, which is for a sort of short slapback like thing. The Tap Dancer we use in conjunction with the Expression Pedal and the Expressionator. So whatever he feels like applying the Expression Pedal to, he can bring up the feedback or the delay times or whatever. And then, as I say, into a fairly noticeable thick vibrato that he uses. Like on Stuck My Kiss, he'll bring that on. Okay. So it's a really heavy distorted tone, but it's got quite a heavy vibrato on it as well. So that gets quite sort of psychedelic at points. Couple of CE2s, as I say, one standard, and then the other's modded to have a much wider out-of-tune sweep. And then from there, we run out to the middle of this top section, the Last Gasp Labs Cybersonic. That's a really, really high-end, wispy kind of, you know, your headphones are broken kind of filter. From that into the Moog low-pass filter, again, that's just set for a different range. That's much more kind of synthy and 70s sexy kind of wow kind of thing. From there we run to the Line 6, which is for a bunch of the synth sounds, like sequential kind of noises, some really heavily sort of synthed out tremolo sounds. Then we've got the 12-stage phaser. That's just one sound that's on Throwaway Your Television, which uses in conjunction with the chasing sequential synth on this. We've got the Slow Gear, which is sort of fun for messing around with. Those people know that one. It's basically just like a violining pedal. You know, it responds to the attack of your picking and just fades in correspondingly, to how you said it. I'm not totally convinced by it, to be honest. I think people buy it because it's rare. I think you could probably just do the same thing with a volume knob, but there you go. Yeah, there's a series of reverbs just set for different size rooms, whatever takes his fancy. We've got the freeze in there. He does like...
What does he do with the freeze? Because that's a pretty specific and unusual pedal.
Well, again, he likes sort of non-guitaristic approaches to guitar playing. Sometimes he'll just flip between that, and then the DD6 next to it is set for, the sort of cascading repeats. Okay. And the hold. So as long as he keeps his foot on it, it'll just build and build and build. Yeah, so he'll flip between the two. And in fact, actually, sometimes go one foot on each and be sort of tap dancing between the two. So you get these crazy kind of, nobody knows what's going on at that point. A bit more reverb chucked on top of that with the Holy Grail, if he feels like it. And actually coming out of that, then we've got the EP boost at that point. That just seems to work best. Yeah, it just seems to work best at that point. We don't really experience a lot of signal loss, weirdly. Yeah, you would have thought with all these pedals.
Yes,
even if you compare it with straight into the amp, you know, it is beyond me why there's even any signal coming out at the end of this. It really is. But but the EP boost just seemed to give the best of itself at that point in the chain. And then we come right over to this side. We've got another Wilson Effects here. That's a Hayes, big Robin Trowery, Hendrix-y bobble there. We've got this, I can't even remember what that is. That's just like a crazy synth fuzz with massive oscillation. So yeah, when he hits that, you'll know all about it. I'll show you that in a minute. We've got that into the Line 6 that he just uses as a phrase sampler and looper. So if he feels like just putting a texture in between songs while we change guitars or whatever, or even if he's just bored, he just samples it himself, lets it run, and then fires it off again later in the song to build stuff up. At this point, it's another one of the Brian Onion things. It's just a single looper, but I just use it as a kill switch. Mostly just because when you start turning all these pedals on, gets the end of a song, it's very hard to turn them all off at once and get one nice clean ending to the song. So that's really just to kill all the gain that he's got, you know, gathered along the way as the song ends. And it gives him a chance to then go back and turn things off without, you know, the amps humming like mad. hefty compressor for some of the cleaner tones here, particularly some of the new album's tunes. He's got some really quite sort of South African guitar pop kind of sound, so that compression covers it quite hard. At the moment, everything splits through this Framptone to the 3 amps and then comes to each of these SGI boxes, radio SGI boxes. This is mostly for the fact that the cable run is so long from here and then back to the amps.
Okay.
Although I think in an attempt to try and consolidate and, you know, compact everything, I think I may end up actually just taking this away and having it at the back of the rack. So we'll just have one out from the board, which will run from one SGI box to another, and then I'll split that behind the amps. Because, we've got festivals coming up and, you know, all this takes a long time to plug in. our signal splitting back, split into three here with the SGI boxes sitting in the back of the rack. We also, there's another radial box there. That's where we take a second feed off the main major head okay. for that. That's as much for show recording as it is for front of house. But yeah, so we split, we go three ways. The Marshall signal is actually also split through a Palmer Pitino, they call it, which is like sort of two amps into one cab device. So if the major, which is the spine of the sound, really ever goes off, I can just hit that in a hurry and it reroutes the major signal through the 9200 and through the JMP1, which has, you know, it's basically just a compact solution to something breaking as it's going to, you know. Basically, I just needed something that was more reliable than the head that I was already expected to break.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, but this does a perfectly good impersonation for a song or two while I swap to another major head. And then we just hit it and we swap back to the main supply. So as I say, that one supply is split to a switcher. The other amps are perfectly reliable. I don't really worry about those so much. And they're not as big a part of the sound. So no one's going to be throwing things at me from front of house if they suddenly lose the Fender or the Sivta. As I say, so those are the other amps. We've got 200-watt Marshall major, 1970, I think this one is, through a 1972 8x10. Originally 120 watt cab, but I just swap out the drivers for 40 watt Celestians because obviously it's fairly likely that 200 watt major was going to cause it to catch fire otherwise. He did point out to me, he said, "It sounds great." I said, "Yeah, but things often sound great just before they catch fire." So.
That's usually the tipping point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, destruction sounds amazing. So, yeah, and then we have the old Silver Tone. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I worried so much about these before I got set my eyes on them. I thought they were going to be a nightmare. They have given me no problems whatsoever. I've got the same amp, same cab. I mean, this is just for show, really. We just use the bottom cab. But they've come out of the box and worked sweetly every day for almost a year now. We've been all around the world. So good old Sears, and they're basic engineering. But yeah, it still works. They're from 1963. You can't really argue with that. And, I mean, you can see, I mean, it bends. It's made of press board. But, it, you know, it's holding its end up. Yeah, and then finally we go into the Super 6 reverb for the Fender. He occasionally engages the reverb or the vibrato on this just on its own,
okay.
just to be a very mild effect in the background of the three. In general, the tone-wise, the major's dialed up to be low-endy,
yeah,
and
say,
is the
so
loudest.
And then how did the breakdown?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty simple split, you know. Nice MIDI-sounding silver tone, which is great for the in-ears. So our monitor engineer uses that a lot for the guys who are on ears. Because that just works particularly well with the range provided by them. And then the Fender is actually pretty quiet and just, as you would expect, pretty light, high-endy. It's got a little tinkle to it.
But they're all on at all times.
But they're all on all the time, and all the effects get applied to all of them, apart from when he just adds the Fender's reverb or vibrato. Yeah.
You mentioned in-ears, but before that you also mentioned a story to me about Josh trying it out for one song.
He's not really very keen on in-ears at all. I mean, the rest of the guys are on it. Obviously, they spent years not being very keen on them either, and they've adapted to them. You know, no one's trying to lean on him to use them, but at the same time, they're obviously saying, well, you know, we found the benefits of them. So we'll see. He tried them out last show for one song, yeah, in the middle of the
What song was it?
He was going to try it for Californication. So, yeah, in the middle of the set, I'm there trying to bolt a pack onto him and force things into his ears. Like, hold still!
How long did it last?
About the first four notes of the jammed intro. I looked up and he was just shaking his head, pulled them out. But Anthony very kindly just went and grabbed them and wrapped them neatly so they wouldn't get destroyed. I was like, thank you very much. Yeah, it's very sweet of him to help me out like that. This is just here for brutal simplicity. He has his own bass cab fed off Flea's amps over here. Just to take some of the pressure off what needs to come through the side fills for the sake of Anthony and the rest of them. We thought, what's the point in fitting through the side fills when we could just have his own cab? In fact, I think on the next leg of the tour, the racks I have, which I made small for the sake of promo and doing small gig shows, I'm actually going to consolidate that into one big thing. So then we're actually going to have our own bass rig over here in one of these racks. So, yeah, it's a work in progress every day.
Before we go downstairs, I want to point out that you also have the cabs opened up. Why do you prefer that?
Oh, yeah. Well,
what you guys are doing.
Well, as I said, I mean, they come as open back cabs, anyway, the Fender and the Silvertone. We were just very wary of the amount of level that was going to be lost into all these percussion mics right behind them. So it was a solution that came up in the rehearsal room. I wasn't that pleased about it at first, because certainly with the Fender, you can see I've actually removed part of the back panel there just to try and get some air around it.
Yeah.
And also that's why that fan sits there, to try and draw some of the hot air out, because I, when the baffles were tight in, providing the most efficient, you know, sound reduction, the amp was getting way too hot. Halfway through the gig, it would start crapping out and, you know, getting all crackly and really nasty. So I had to say to the sound guys, look, you know, this amp needs to breathe. You're just going to have to suck it, I'm afraid, with the old percussion. Why don't you just put baffling around the percussion instead of on the back of my amps? How about that? But, you know, that's another discussion.
So we're down in the guitar area.
Oh, yes. Hello. Oh, wait. Oh, there you are. Well, I wasn't expecting you so soon. We've got a core of Strats, as you might expect, for Chili Peppers. We actually start with the guitar that isn't even his. This belongs to Chad. This is his 63 Tobacco Sunburst. Lovely piece. Fairly thick neck. Great guitar. This would mostly came down to the fact that people kind of expect to see a Tobacco Sunburst Strat on the stage. So Chad was very kind in providing this. He occasionally leans over and asks me threateningly if I'm taking good care of it, which of course I am. I can't say the same for Josh, it's a great guitar. Love it a bit. I mean, you gotta spend a lot of time with it because obviously being the only whammy guitar he has.
What songs does he play on Chad's Strat then?
I untangled. Let me see. He tends to play kind of older, maybe you might say John era songs on those. He'll play like Higher Ground. Let me see. What else have we got? Emmett Remus and stuff like that. Anything that requires a whammy bar, he'll go in for some of that. This is a list that will get issued from Anthony sort of mid-evening, and then every time I'll go and have a little confab with Josh and we'll discuss what we want to do. I mean, he goes at them pretty hard. I mean, most of the time they're almost in tune by the time he's finished with them, but maybe not enough to start another song. So we just have a little discussion about, you know, which guitar would suit or which one he'd like to try for a change, you know. Some are always the same, you know. This is Gus, after King Gustav of Sweden, which is a 1974 hardtail Strat with a really thin neck. And we found this in a great store called Håkans in Stockholm. It's kind of the backup main Strat, really. But I think it's eventually going to find its way into his affections. Even though it's a hardtail, there's something great, there's something really solid about its tone.
This one's probably more early 90s, mid-90s songs too. Like.
Yeah, exactly. And this is his main black Strat called Nero, which is a 66 with a 68 neck.
Named after the Roman emperor?
Yeah. Well,
apparently fiddled.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was that combination of it being black, as in like Cavallo Nero. And I had this sort of mental image of Nero fiddling while Rome burned, which is something kind of popped into my mind while watching Josh play. He loves to go at it with this. I mean, I'm not entirely sure why it's got this different neck on it. If you look carefully, you're almost on the point of losing the E off the side. The neck's actually a little bit too narrow for the pocket. So I don't know why that happened along the way, but it was handed to me one day. I knew at the beginning of this tour, White Penguin. Yeah, well, he just plays this on a few of the Californication era ones. It's, in a way, it's a bit of a, it's a clean. It's kind of a tip of the hat to John. I think that's probably the best thing to say about that is that, you know, it's very shiny, you know. A lot of people are very attracted to it, you know. I get more comments about this than anything else. People go, oh, isn't it gold and shiny? I'm not that keen on these Melita bridges, to be honest, or synchrotronic or whatever they're called. They just seem to fall to bits when they feel like it. I've had that a few times where he's just given it back to me and there's just bits falling out, you know. So I have a lot of spares on hand to patch it together at the last minute. I mean, I will say, you know, he puts a lot of stress on things. So you spend a lot of time every day going around checking nuts and bolts and tidying things, you know. It's just everyday maintenance. Early 70s 335 that we call Yogi because it looks a bit like a bear.
So that make you Ranger Smith then?
Beg your pardon, sir?
Would that make you Ranger Smith?
Ranger Smith, yeah, exactly. Always stealing those picnic baskets. Yeah, see, I just thought it looked a bit like a bear's ass for mine. He plays this on... there's a Neil Young tune they do called Everybody Knows Here Is Nowhere. He'll play on that. He plays it on University Speaking. Doesn't seem to be really any particular rhyme or reason to why we use some guitars more than others. See, this got used in a video for the next single the other day, and it's still got crap on it from the video shoot. But that's a nice piece. I'm very fond of that guitar. It never gives me any trouble. What else we got? I'll come to that one last. But we've got this great old, I think it's a 67 Tele. The Tele Custom, that was actually John's. He gave that to Josh many years ago. I mean, he had that when he was playing with PJ Harvey when I first met him. Again, great guitar. You can do anything to that and it won't go out of tune. Nice 64 custom color Jaguar. Again, found this in the same place in Stockholm. He'll play this on some of the kind of lighter Frusciante era stuff, like Wet Sand and stuff. Just anything a little bit plinky, where it isn't going to have a massive gain going on, he'll go for some of this. Thankfully, leaves it alone with the tremolo, yeah.
The last two look pretty unusual.
Yeah, well, we've got... I'm not quite sure where he found this. It's just appeared a little while ago. Apparently very rare, I believe. 12-string Firebird, but the pickguard doesn't really look exactly original to me. And also the switching arrangement. We actually went to House of Guitars the other day, and there was one with what appeared to be an original pickguard on it. And I think that's just a switch between the two, whereas this has got on-off for each. And it also has got that strangely off-center bit of inlay there. So I don't know if this was like a factory second, or if it was a sort of, you know, half-assed prototype before they decided to build a small number of them.
What song is he using this one on?
He hasn't used it on anything at all so far. It's just in here. Sometimes, if he's feeling particularly exciting, he might tell me before the final song of the show that he wants to use this for the final segment of that song. So when there's a four-bar rest, I jump up there and actually swap guitars with him in the middle of the song, and then he'll come out and rock this for a bit. He's used it for the encore jam a few times, okay, if he just feels getting a bit out there. And then, say next to that, is, again, it doesn't get used a great deal, but more than that one, this is a Coronado 12 in the sort of burnt orange, and this is the only one that isn't in standard. This is in a drop to half step for Breaking the Girl. Okay. And again, it has very much a tone of its own. It's a little bit scratchy, you know, there's a bit of a clatter to it, but it suits the version of the song they're doing now. You know, it's not an acoustic song they're doing it as. It's more of a kind of garaged out kind of number. So, yeah, it works. He goes from the neck for the main part, and then when you go into the big percussive section in the middle with all the kind of tin cans and stuff, when you go to the bridge, and then it really kind of digs in and gets a bit honky. But it suits very well, so there you go. And again, I think the colour may have had something to do with its purchase.
To ignore this would be a mistake.
Yeah, so we try and gather up as many majors as we can, because I think there was about 1,000 made in the first place. So... I know, but my kind of rule of thumb, I reckon that probably means there's probably about 800 still in existence, you know, over this kind of time span. This is, again, the same store in Sweden, again, in Stockholm, Håkans. They had this, and it used to belong to the Cardigans. Great sounding amp. This is my main backup. And then I have about four or five other standard black ones. They're all from that late 60s, early 70s period. Some have the plexi panel and some of the steel, or the JMP style switches. I actually have a custom coloured blue one, kind of a royal blue, that I've just bought from an Yngwie J. Malmsteen fan somewhere up north in England. He was selling it because he's buying himself an Uli John Roth Sky guitar. That was one of the more prosaic conversations I've ever had. No, actually, that's very unfair. John, if you ever watch this, I'm very happy you sold me the amp. Thank you. I've yet to see that. That's sitting at a friend's house in Manchester somewhere, and that will be delivered to our Nebworth show. But I say, with that in mind, I've actually got Marshall building me a white cab to go with this one, and then hopefully when we actually get the colour and we can match it, we'll get a blue cab as well. I don't know really why I'm doing that. I just, you know, I obviously haven't got enough to do. and I apologise for not remembering the exact name of the manufacturer, because he's actually put a sort of custom sticker on. But Chris, our drum tech, and Josh, both love shopping. So between them, they sort of plotted to have these things built. But they call a Telemaster, JMT, I think it's called. I'll get back to you on that, because I would feel bad for not promoting this guy, because he's made a great guitar. As you can see, you know, you choose how heavily relict it is. And they both just fancy one of these. So it's, you know, Seymour 56 Tele in the bridge, lipstick in the neck. Just a great sounding guitar. They both have a fetish for matching headstocks, but they've, as I say, it's come under the name of Fool's Telemaster, and they have the Pimp 01 serial number on the back. I think Chris's is Pimp 02. His is in a sort of faded seafoam greeny blue. So this is the newest edition, and I must say it sounds great. I think he's going to get a bunch more of these ordered. So, well, I guess I'll need another guitar vault, won't I?
What about strings and gauges for...
Daddario 1046s all across the board, apart from on the penguin, which we call Pingu. Do you have Pingu here? No, there's a British TV program for kids, a little animated penguin. He just spends his time hanging out on the ice and, you know, playing with his friends and doing this. But he's called Pingu, so that's called Pingu. That's 11 to 49, again, Daddario's. Everything else, no, just that, as is. And then Daddario's standard 12-string sets. He's played them forever. He's perfectly happy with them.
Guitar picks?
Tortex 60s. Yeah, exactly. Again, I mean, it's what he's always used. I think John used the same thing. I think Paul Gilbert uses them, which was weird. Paul. You know, I was surprised to read that. Yeah, it's about the size of it. Shaw Wireless. You are for WD Wireless. No problems with that. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff I kind of inherited in a way because, you know, the whole touring machinery of this band has been in place for so long, so there were things which I didn't have to make decisions about. You know, oh yeah, no, that's all. He always we'll close the lid or someone will get scalded. Yeah, we will be having tea in a minute, you included. Yeah, that's about the size of it. As I say, you know, I've got piles of spares everywhere. I've got another 8x10 in here. I've got pedals filling boxes all around me. Yeah, so sometimes a cup of tea is all you can really rely on.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time, mate.
Not at all. Yeah, thank you, people in the world of internet television.
There you go, another rig round on, this time with Josh Klinghoffer of Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm Chris Keys for PremierGuitar.com.